You know, many men and women today claim to be experts, but it's impossible to be an expert in every field of study. Instead, we are selective experts. A person might be brilliant when it comes to some very specific area of science or a selective period of history or a particular era of art. But it's impossible for a human being to know everything about every subject. Those who have studied human knowledge have come up with some very impressive statistics. For example, if the sum total of man's knowledge could be represented graphically, from the beginning of time until 1845, it would equal 1 inch. And from 1845, it would equal 3 inches. And then from 1945 until 1975, the height of the Washington Monument. And experts tell us that the amount of knowledge that man has doubles every 10 years. In fact, it's exploding at such a rate, more than 2,000 pages a minute, that even Einstein could not keep up with it. If you read 24 hours a day from age 21 to 70 and retained all that you read, you would be 1.5 million years behind when you finished. Now, my friends, that's impossible for you and I to know everything. We live today in an informational age. Low-cost personal computers coupled with high-speed internet access has brought the world's knowledge literally to our fingertips. By pointing and clicking, we can access libraries around the world, access information about every conceivable topic from self-proclaimed experts or from published resource materials without leaving the comforts of our homes. Plus, through the marvels of the internet, we can have access to up-to-the-minute breaking news stories from around the world. We can visit virtually hundreds of libraries across the country, including the largest library of all, the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. Books, magazines, individual articles, research papers are all available online. It's absolutely amazing the information that is available at our fingertips today. But all of this information only reinforces what we already know, and that is none of us can know it all. Oh, there are some who think they know it all, but we find that they are usually obnoxious and quite ignorant in certain areas. For the truth is, no one knows everything except for one person, and that is God Himself. With all man's knowledge, nothing compares, though, with the majesty of our God. Now, when I speak of majesty, I'm talking about the greatness of our God. The psalmist says in Psalm 93, verse 1, "The Lord reigns. He is clothed with majesty. The Lord is clothed. He has girded himself with strength. Surely the world is established so that it cannot be moved." Our God is clothed with greatness. He's clothed with majesty. Peter recalled the glory of the transfiguration of Jesus Christ in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 16. He says that we were eyewitnesses of his majesty. In the book of Hebrews, the writer speaks of the greatness of God when he writes concerning Christ, that he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. And whenever majesty is mentioned in the Bible, it is always linked with worship. For those who come to understand how great God is will bow in humble worship of him. Perhaps this is why there is such a lack of worship and service today. It could be because our God is too small. What do you think of when you think about the greatness of God or the majesty of God? Maybe nothing comes to mind. We tend to emphasize the personal nature of God, and sometimes this leaves the impression that God is a person like you and I, weak, inadequate, ineffective, a little pathetic, anemic God. But this is not the God of the Bible. We are limited in regards to direction, space, time, knowledge, and power, but not God. And although God is personal, He is also at the same time great. He has us in His hands, but we never have Him in ours. Our God is a great God. But how do we form a right view of God's greatness? How can we get the greatness of God in proper focus so that our God is not anemic or weakly? To do so, we have to remove from our thoughts of God any limits which would make Him small. You know, we think in terms of limits. A car has a certain limit as to the number of people that it can comfortably seat. I remember at a youth rally when I was younger, being one of 13 to fit inside a 1970 VW Beetle. Now, that was in my weightless days. Now, 13 of us fits in, but I was anything but comfortable. There are limits. Most of us have not memorized the Encyclopedia Britannica or the entire Bible. The late evangelist Dr. Jack Van Impe was known as the Walking Bible, for he had memorized the entire New Testament and most of the Old. But he had not memorized all of it. Even he had his limitations. And that's okay, because we are accustomed to living with limitations. But God has no limits. When we speak of the limitless God, we attach the word omni to various attributes. The word omni means all, without limits, or totally, fully, or completely. Last week we discovered that God is omnipotent, that is, He is all-powerful. Our God can do anything that is an object of His power. He has unlimited strength and resources. He can do anything that He desires. Now, as we're going to see after Mother's Day, which is next Sunday, the following weeks, we're going to see that God is omnipresent. That is, He is everywhere present at once in the fullness and totality of His being. He is not limited by time or space. He is totally here as well as He's totally there. And as we're going to see this morning, our God is omniscient. That is, God knows everything. And I mean everything. Now, I've asked us to turn in our Bibles this morning to Psalm 139. Many Bible scholars believe that David wrote Psalm 139 on the heels of his confession of sin and adultery and murder. We've looked at that psalm this morning, Psalm 32, where David writes about that confession. But here, this is a psalm right after that. David, in a weak moment of the flesh, looked around him, saw that no one was looking, and then looked in the wrong direction on the woman who was taking a bath on her roof. And he sent for her, slept with her, and together they conceived a child. To cover it up, his sin, eventually he had her husband Uriah killed in a battle. And David thought he got away with murder. But David, in his looking around to see if anyone was watching, failed to look up, for God plainly saw what happened. But for about a year, God let David think that he got away with this one, until God sends Nathan the prophet to confront David. And as we talked about this morning, David confesses his sins, God forgives him, and in light of God's great mercy and grace, David meditates in Psalm 139 on just how big his God is. And David begins with this first area where God excels, and that is in His knowledge. God knows everything. Look at what David says beginning at verse 1. Psalm 139 and verse 1. David writes, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thoughts from afar off. You comprehend my paths and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You have hedged me behind and before, and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. David is overwhelmed by God's knowledge of him. Now, what do we mean by when we talk about the fact that God is omniscient? Well, we mean that our God knows everything, both the actual and the potential. God has perfect knowledge of what actually happened in the past, what is currently happening right now all over this world, and what will take place in the future. Of God, Isaiah writes, Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things that are not yet done. From eternity, God knows what will take place, what's taking place now, and what's going to take place in the future. But God not only knows what actually was, is, or will be, but God also knows perfectly all possible scenarios. What might be? When David was hiding from Saul in Keilah, a Philistine city, he had heard that Saul was seeking to come there and destroy the city because of David. And David inquired of the Lord as to whether Saul is coming and whether the men of Keilah would turn on David and deliver him to Saul. In 1 Samuel 23, verse 12, David asked this, Will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hands of Saul? And the Lord said, They will deliver you. Now, this knowledge of what might happen, this is possibly happen, it led David to flee from Keilah and to save himself, because God knows not only what is, but what might be. He knows perfectly the choices we will make in life, the free choices that people make. He knows that all of this plays into his knowledge of everything. So there are no questions that confound him, no dilemmas that can confuse him, no events to surprise him. There are no gaps in God's knowledge, for he knows everything immediately. He knows everything immediately. God's knowledge is not growing like our knowledge grows, for he knows everything at once. He's not learning new things every day. And since God does not change, his knowledge also does not change. What he knows, he has known from eternity. That's what we call omniscience. Now, our God also knows the end of all actions and the perfect means to achieve those ends. And he never makes a mistake. He never says to himself, Oh, I should have done it this way instead. And while our God seeks our good and happiness in life and seeks to perfect us in holiness, the highest end is not our happiness nor our holiness, but rather his glory. God does everything to bring glory and honor and praise to him. And this is what we call wisdom. Wisdom is knowing the ends of all things and the perfect means to achieve those ends. Our God is an all-wise God. Now, this means that God knows everything about you and I. He knows everything about you and I. Look again at what David says in verse 1. He says, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You have searched me and know me. The word known is the same word used of Adam knowing Eve in the book of Genesis, of intimate marital relationship. And here it says that God searches and knows us intimately. He knows us intimately. Now David elaborates on God's intimate knowledge of you and I because he continues in verse 2. He says, you know my sitting down and my rising up, and you understand my thoughts afar off. God knows what you do each moment of the day. Down, sitting down, rising up was a Hebrew way of saying, you know everything about me from when I get up in the morning until the time I go to bed. God, you know when I get out of bed in the morning, when I crawl in at night, and you know everything in between. There's not an event in my life that escapes God's notice. God sees it all. The psalmist says, I think it's David says in Psalm 33, verse 13, the Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From the place of his dwelling, he looks on all the inhabitants of the earth. He fashions their hearts individually. He considers all their works. God looks down upon everybody. He considers all our works. He knows what everyone's doing, all the inhabitants of the earth. He sees and knows everyone and knows everything about everyone. That is amazing knowledge. That's so far beyond us. Now, God not only knows what we do, but he also knows why we do it. The word thought is the Hebrew word for purpose or aim. God knows our motives. He knows why we do what we do. The writer to the Hebrews says in Hebrews 4, verse 12, for the word of God is living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even the division of soul and spirit and joint and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. And there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. God discerns the intents of our hearts. He knows why we do what we do, our motivations. We are like an open book to him. Nothing is hidden from God. God knows everything about us. And he knows what we do in public as well as in private. For note what David says in verse 3. He says, you comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. The path is public. The lying down is private. And so God's intimately acquainted with all of our ways. He knows where we've been. In fact, there's not a place on the face of the earth that you can go to hide from God. So whether you are in downtown Philadelphia, or whether you're in Berlin, at Ocean City, New Jersey, wherever you might go, God knows. He doesn't lose track of our whereabouts. And he knows what we do in the secrecy of our own homes when no one else is around. You know, people say, and I've heard it said on TV, the advertisement, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Well, you know what? What happens in Vegas might be shielded from human knowledge, but God knows what happens in Vegas because God knows everything. He knows, not only hears and knows what we're saying, but he knows our very thoughts. He knows our very thoughts. For consider verse 4. He says, for there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. Even before I can get the word off of my tongue, even before I can spit it out, God knows. He knows what I'm thinking. He knows what you're thinking right now. Think about that. God charts our words and even the feelings that are connected with them. He monitors our temperature. He feels the anger rising. He knows when we're ticked off. He knows when we're scared to death. Good or bad, God sees it all, and he knows it all. In fact, knowledge of you and I is so complete that Jesus said that the very hairs of our heads are all numbered. Now, I guess for some people, there's not too many of them to number. And God knows when number 2,300,365 goes down the drain. God knows everything about you and I. Now, the omniscience of God is what separates him from any other god that man worships in this universe. You know, many pagan religions believe that their gods could be fooled, that they could be tricked, so that they do not see what the worshipers are actually doing. But our God cannot be fooled. He cannot be tricked. He knows everything that we think, say, or do, and also what we've said or did something. He knows everything about this universe, for he made it all. He has complete, full, perfect knowledge of everything. But what effect does knowing that God knows everything about you have upon you? You know, here in America, we are concerned about our privacy and security. There are HIPAA laws that protect our medical information from being disseminated to everyone. And only those that we list are to be privy to our medical records. It's a little disconcerting, and many people think that our government is spying on us, or that Apple or Google know about our whereabouts or what we might be saying in the privacy of our homes. You know, Siri, and that one that begins with A, I'm not going to say her name because if I do, she might start talking to some of you. You know, she's listening to you. And who knows where that information is going? You know, back in the days when I could get around on Mondays before all this restriction, I had a normal Monday morning routine of going to the bank, going to the post office, and then doing grocery shopping. And evidently it must have been such a set routine, because after I got done shopping at Aldi's, my Apple Watch would inform me that it was going to take me 5 minutes to go from Aldi's to ShopRite. Now, how did my Apple Watch know that I was planning to go to ShopRite after Aldi's? That's scary, isn't it? And now there are some who are proposing that in order for us to get back to some normalcy of life, that they need to track those with COVID-19 and alert people surrounding them through an application on our smartphone. Both Apple and Google are combining forces to create such an app. And this raises all kinds of privacy concerns. It's not necessarily that we have things to hide, but we don't want everyone to know where we are, what we're doing, or what we might be thinking to do, or where we are going, and so on. So how do you feel about the fact that God knows everything about you and what you do in the privacy of your home as well as in the marketplace? What effect does the God's pervasive and evasive knowledge have upon you? Well, knowing that God knows it all, first of all, it will either comfort or convict us, one of the two. For look at what David says in verse 5. David writes this, "You have hedged me behind and before, and laid your hand upon me." David feels boxed in by God's knowledge. Because God knows everything about him, knows where he's going, what he's thinking, and what's happening. He feels boxed in. But may I say, I believe that this is boxed in a good sense. Since God knows his past, his present, and his future, David knew that nothing could happen to him from any direction, but that God would know about it and be there to help. Certainly, it's a comfort to know that God knows our needs in life. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6 that when you pray, do not use vain repetition as the heathen do, for they think that they will be heard for their many words. Therefore, do not be like them, for your heavenly Father knows the things that you have need of before you ask Him. God knows what you have need of before you ask. But He has more than knowledge about our needs, because our Father has he also has the know-how to meet those needs. He knows what we need, but He has the know-how to meet those needs. For Jesus says in Matthew 7, verse 11, "If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask Him?" God has the know-how in knowing how to give good gifts to us. It's a comfort, too, to know that our God knows all of our service that we do for Him. The writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10, "God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown towards His name, in that you have ministered to the saints and do minister." God is a boss who sees what's happening in His workforce. Nothing escapes His notice. In fact, Jesus says that the Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Every act of kindness, every cup of water given in God's name, every encouraging word spoken, God takes note of it, and God celebrates our good deeds. Every secret act of character, conviction, and courage has been observed in living color by the omniscient God. And that's a great comfort for us, isn't it? It's a comfort, too, to know that even though God knows all of my frailties and sinful tendencies, He still loves me and accepts me. You know, John says in 1 John chapter 3, verse 19 and 20, says, "And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before Him. For if our hearts condemn us, God is greater than our hearts and knows all things." Now, I must say, this is a very hard verse to understand. But what appears that John is saying is that although our hearts may condemn us because of our falling short of God's standard of love, yet our God can look past the sins to our hearts. He sees beyond our disobedience and failure to a heart of love. It's like David. We talked about him this morning in our Sunday school class, about David's sin of adultery and murder and so on. Yet God could look past that, and He could see that David had a heart after God's own heart. And it's like Peter, who responds to the Lord's continually questioning concerning Peter's love. And Peter says, Lord, You know all things. You know that I love You. Lord, You can see beyond my denial, beyond my disobedience. You know that deep down inside of me that I really do love You. Thus, the gaze of our God is a source of confidence and assurance for the child of God. It's a great comfort also to know that God knows those who belong to Him. God knows the ones that belong to Him. Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 19, "Nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having this seal. The Lord knows those who are His, and let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity." The Lord knows those who belong to Him, those who are trusting in Him. But the Lord has the knowledge of those who belong to Him, but also the know-how in order to keep secure those who belong to Him. Peter reveals that the Lord knows how to rescue the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. Our God knows how to save and to keep those who are trusting in Him. So there is great comfort in knowing that God knows everything about us. But may I say, this knowledge is also a source of conviction and an effective deterrent for sin. For it is downright convicting to think that God knows me so intimately that I cannot even think one lustful thought without God knowing it. It's downright convicting to think that I cannot utter one foul word or commit some act of sin in the pitch darkness without God having full knowledge of it. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 5, he says, "Therefore judge nothing before the time, until the Lord comes, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and reveal the counsels of the heart, then each one's praise will come from God." One day, my every thought's going to be revealed. My every motive of my heart's going to be laid bare. And this is powerful, I believe, powerful motivation to live for the Lord and to seek to please Him. So knowing God, knowing that God knows everything, not only brings comfort to our hearts, but also can bring conviction as well. Secondly, knowing God, that God knows it all, cuts out any pretense with God. It cuts out any pretense with God. You know, one of our greatest fears in life is this. If people only knew, if my brothers and sisters only knew what I had done in the past, or if they only knew what sins I had committed, what thoughts raced through my mind, if they only knew the secrets that I have been carrying around through life, if people only knew, then they would not love me. We fear the loss of love if people really knew us. But listen, my friends, we do not need to fear this with God because God knows everything about us. There are no secrets with God, absolutely none. And the overwhelming truth is that God loves us in spite of all that He knows about us. We don't need to put on a face with God. We don't need to try to hide how we really feel or what we're really thinking because God already knows. See, Jesus Christ was not fooled by the legalism of the Pharisees. On the outside, they appeared to be righteous, religious men. They did all the right things and perhaps said all the right things, but their heart, Jesus says, was a den of iniquity far from God. They were whitewashed tombs. Beautiful on the outside, but full of dead man's bones on the inside. Jesus knew what was on the inside. And so, my friends, we cannot fool God. No needs to be any monkey business. We might be able to fool the people here at East Berlin Community Church. We might be able to fool our spouses, or our families, or even people at work and God. But God sees, and God knows what we are really like. And He not only knows what we said or did, but He also knows why we did or said something. So He knows why we're here this morning, if it's for the proper reason or not. God knows our hearts, what's in our hearts. So this means we need to just drop the mask when it comes to worship and be authentic with God. Be genuine. Don't be act super spiritual because God sees what's on the inside. We should be the same in church as we're at home or at work. Anything else is playing games with God. And we can drop the mask when approaching God in prayer. One of the characteristics I find refreshing in the Psalms is how David addresses God without pretense. He expresses what he's feeling at the time, his fears, his doubts, his anger with God for not answering as quickly as he wanted, his uncertainties as well as his joy and confidence. David tells it like it is because the one he is addressing already knows. And so he can be honest with God, honest with his feelings, and in doing so could then deal with the negative emotions that he was experiencing. For he usually exited his prayer with praise and renewed confidence. See, knowing that God knows everything about God enables us to be real with God. We can cut out the pretense with God. May I say lastly this morning, knowing that God knows everything creates genuine awe and worship of God. Look at how David concludes this paragraph in verse 6. He says, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it." As he was thinking about and contemplating, he says, "Man, God, you are in a league by yourself. There is none like you. I can't even comprehend you, nor your knowledge." It's as if David is saying, Lord, that's it, Lord. I can't write anything more. I can't put anything down on a page what it's like to be in a relationship with a God who is so intimately acquainted with me. I am in all of you. Wow, what a God. Now, this is the same reaction that Paul had after contemplating God's eternal plan and choosing Israel to be his channel of blessing to the nations and then reselecting them after they had rejected the Messiah. Paul erupts with these words recorded in Romans chapter 11, verse 33. It says, "Oh, the depths of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has become his counselor, or who has first given to him, and it shall be repaid to him? For of him, and through him, and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen." Wow! What a God! What a God! Now God, in application, God has perfect knowledge of what we're handling right now with this social isolation and restrictions due to the COVID-19. He knows the hardships we might be experiencing. He also knows the course that this pandemic might take and whether you and I will contract this disease. One of the things that adds to the anxiety we all are feeling right now is that no one knows who might be a carrier of the virus, so it's possible for someone to have the disease and have no symptoms at all. Every person we meet on the street or in the grocery store might be a carrier, and we could all become infected. This virus is an invisible enemy. And there is so much more about COVID-19 that we do not know. The experts are divided. When you listen to them on the TV, you really come to the realization that man doesn't know everything. Some say that the current practices of social distancing and wearing masks and avoiding large crowds will continue well into the future. Whereas others are saying that the way to get our economy and life back to normal is to ease the restrictions, allow people to go back to work, to develop immunity to this virus, which if enough people develop an immunity, it will eventually stop the spread of the virus and the pandemic will die out. Restrict those who are the most vulnerable, but allow healthy people to return to a normal life. But who is to say who is right? I know I don't know enough to make that judgment call. Experts are divided. You know, since I've been quarantined for 2 weeks every day, I'm supposed to look for signs of having contracted this disease. Every time I cough or sneeze, I wonder if I have it. Every time I feel a little bit warm, I wonder if I have an elevated temperature. I hear of the thousands who have died in New Jersey and wonder if I or someone who I love might be the next. Oh, my mind and oh, my heart at night are all of you. I think and pray for those of us who have underlying health issues which make us so vulnerable. When Joe passed away a few weeks ago, I told Stanley at the time we talked together, I said, I hope that this is it. I hope there are no more. I hope and pray he is the only one that we have to mourn during this time. And so far, he is. But none of us really know what's going to happen in the future. I don't know what this afternoon will hold for me or for those I love, much less 10 or 15 years from now. But I'm here to say this morning, God knows. God knows. You know, David reveals in Psalm 139, verse 16, that when it comes to you and I, before we were even born, he says that in your book they are all written, the days fashioned for me, yet as yet there were none of them. God knows the day of my birth. He knows the day of my death. He knows every day in between. He knows the length of the dash between the day that I was born and the day that it'll be recorded that I die. They're all recorded in his book. Even before I was born they were recorded. And I don't know how many more pages I have left, or you have left. Only God knows. And so our response has to be, and that is, we need to trust the God who knows everything. With our lives, with our future, with this pandemic. Do what we believe God wants us to do today. Live every day to the fullest. And leave the results up to Him. Nothing is ever going to escape His notice. There is full disclosure with God. For the God who knows everything is the God who can be trusted.